the original Grand Funk Railroad. The band, you might recall, recorded a total of 17 albums, total sales, more than 25 million records. Mark Farner is the unmistakable voice, guitarist, and songwriter that powered the original Grand Funk Railroad to 12 platinum and 15 gold albums. After only 3 guitar lessons, Mark put various bands together in the mid-60s. Mark and his bands played the usual dates at a teenage band at play, you know, high school dances, VFW halls, wedding receptions, stuff like that. In 71, Mark and the original Grand Funk Railroad set the attendance record at New York Shea Stadium for a concert surpassing the record by the Beatles in 1966. Did you know that? And a record that, by the way, still stands today, about 30 years later. In early 77, Grand Funk called it quits after taking a year or so off. Mark toured with the reunited original Grand Funk Railroad in 96, 97, and 98, and was named to Polestar's Top 100 Tours of 1998. VH1, in fact, featured Mark and the original Grand Funk Railroad on a Behind the Music special. They've been airing since early 1999. Since 99, Mark Farner has been touring with his own band, Energy. That's N-R-G, Energy. I said, the voice, the guitarist, the songwriter from Grand Funk Railroad, Mark Farner. Mark, welcome to Coast AM.
Good to be here with you, Art.
God, it's great to have you. What part of the country are you in?
In Michigan, the northern tip of the Lower Peninsula.
All right.
Lake Michigan shoreline.
Well, man, you hit it early. 20 years old, that's awfully early to be.
It sure is.
Really making it big. How old are you now? You willing to say?
I'm 57.
57?
Yeah.
Well, I just made 60, so. Listen, man, when you were playing that music, I was playing your music. You know, I was radio station to radio station, top 40 all over the country. So I was playing that stuff.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
You betcha. There was no choice. Believe me, your records hit it so hard and so big that everybody played them. And there was a schism that happened between you and the rest of Grand Funk. Can you talk to that at all?
Yeah. Well,
what happened?
You know, we got back together after I did the Ringo Starr tour. We got back together in 96, and they wanted me to stop touring. Don and Mel wanted me to stop touring solo for the time period that I was going to be out with them. And I said, well, I'll do that, but only for 2 years. And I actually put in an additional year because the first year was kind of light. We were being booked by Punch Andrews, Bob Seger's manager, and managed by them, and then we moved on after that and did the Behind the Music thing with the VH1. But at the end of that third year, then I was going to go back and do my solo, like I told them. And then they went, well, we want to keep going. I said, well, too bad, because the agreement was 2 years, and I've put in 3, so I'm really going to go do this. I can't do this anymore. You know, I mean, the reunion was fun, but I got my solo career. And we had talked about this previously, and then all of a sudden they go, well, we remember you saying that, but we don't remember it being 2 years. Anyways, it was just a bunch of crap, and because the corporation, GFR, controls the trademark. Don Brewer came to me one day, and he's gone to law school, and I never graduated high school, which I'm not proud of that, but I just to let you know that I don't know much about law in itself, but Don told me that if I signed my ownership of the corporation or my trademark into the corporation, that it would have some kind of a protective umbrella or something. It sounded good to me, and I said, okay, cool, let's do it. And then the next thing you know, they're voting me out, telling me they're going to go on the road and they're going to get replacements for me, and there's not a thing I can do about it because I'm only one third of the corporation.
Well, maybe a third, but I mean, you were the voice.
Yeah.
You were writing the music. That's a pretty big third.
Yeah, 90-some percent of the music.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's heavy duty. So I don't see how they could take such cavalier attitude.
Well, deceit works in this world, and it seems like, you know, it's just, it's okay. So what you lie to get elected? You could become president. Just lie your butt off, man, you know.
Now, I've long said I don't think it actually would be possible in modern society to be elected president of the United States without lying.
Exactly.
I don't think it could be done.
I'm with you.
And in fact, I doubt you can even get to the House or the Senate without lots of big ones.
Oh, yeah.
So all right, so the big break. It seems like, why'd all the big groups break up?
I haven't looked. I think it's a lot of it is ego, to tell you the truth. I mean, you know, and we think so much of ourselves, and, well, you can't tell me that because I'm the one that made that, and, oh, you know, God, it's just back and forth, and, well, I'm the one responsible for that, and I'm, you know.
Is it a natural thing to occur? Because you're always worried that, you know, like your success is just because you're part of a group, and somehow I'm sure you want to prove to yourself. Mark, you have a book out, and you had it out for, what, a couple of years. What is the name of your book?
It's From Grand Funk to Grace.
From Grand Funk to Grace, that's great. and what, it's the story of Grand Funk?
It's my story, which includes the years of Grand Funk. But also tells about my father, who was a War II vet, tank driver in the 7th Armored Division. My mother, who was the first female welder at Fisher Body, where they were making Sherman tanks, the kind that my dad drove.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite a story. Christopher Englehart, the author, is a Michigan resident, knows the whole the history of Michigan and the different groups that, of course, a lot of music came out of Michigan because I believe from the auto factories being there that it drew people from all over the United States, different various types of, you know, musical tastes, especially from, well, my mother's side of the family was Leechville, Arkansas, and my grandpa Cotton, Uncle Woody, everybody moved to Flint, Michigan to get these high-paying auto factory jobs. It brought a lot of musicians into the area that, you know, combine their musical talents with other musicians who were brought in from there, and so we had a nice pool of talent in Michigan. A lot of bands came out of the area, and so Chris put together the whole book in a really good way. I mean, you know, because he's very meticulous about detail, and I'm very satisfied with the job that was done on it.
All right. So if you want to know the story, that's how. It's available, I don't know, Amazon.com probably, right?
Right. And the author's website, which is 6270@charter.net, and my website, markfarner.com.
All right. Excellent. Remember Rick Nelson's garden party?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, he had a rough experience with the garden. And I wonder if that translates. I mean, sometimes when you go and you play and you lay down the old stuff and you lay down the new stuff, do you ever get a garden party kind of feeling, you know, like they want to hear the old stuff, they don't want to hear the new stuff?
Well, I keep enough of it in there because I've got so much music to pull from all the albums, and the people that, you know, the hardcore fans that come to see me, they like to hear all that three-piece stuff that I just, you know, some obscure song like People, Let's Stop the War. I mean, it's very apropos today.
God, it is again, isn't it?
Yes, and I wrote it during the Vietnam era, of course, and it was big then, but it gets a good reception today. And
yeah, I can see why.
Yeah.
But so you've got plenty to pull from that's new, and you've got plenty to pull from that's old, really.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I don't do, you know, the contemporary Christian albums that I made, actually there was three of them. One was like a compilation. That was on a contemporary Christian label. But when I would go to churches and when I would, you know, play at these religious functions and tell people that, you know, God didn't need their money and stuff, I mean, I wasn't welcome back to a lot of I believe in a unconditional love, and that's the way I read it. And that's the way it works for me. It's the unconditional love of God shown to all people from the beginning to the end of time. And he loves us all the same, and we're all in. And any of this other crap don't apply.
So you got religion or always had it?
No, I got the truth. I got, you know, what I believe. That from first I got into the religious part of it, and I jumped through the religious hoops because I thought, you know, here I was a sinner, sending my ass off out here in the world. I better go to church and get saved. And I went through all of the motions, and you know, that was, it's not fulfilling because you got to do things. I mean, you got to become like that whatever sect of, you know, Christianity it is. I mean, there's over 2,000 denominations of the Protestant faith alone. Which one do you pick to go to? And there's all kinds of spin-offs and different, you know, Catholicism and everything that you can get into with it. It's the Bible, but anybody that's not preaching the unconditional love or, you know, teaching the unconditional love is teaching a false Jesus, because, you know, that was supposed to be the propitiation for all sins of all the world for all time. And, you know,
in view of the way you feel and your religion, I've heard that you had a UFO sighting.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And I'd be most interested to hear about it and how it fits into what you believe.
Okay. Well, let me tell you about it. It was the first one I saw, which was the most up close and real. It was only maybe 100 yards away from us. I say us because once I pulled in the driveway with the keyboard player, I was the boss man at the time, mm-hmm. and the keyboard player, Warren Keith, who ended up playing piano for Hank Williams Jr., he was driving his Cadillac. We pulled in at my folks' house to stop over and sleep until, you know, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning when we got there. We were going to get up and go the rest of the way in the morning, so I go up and I'm crawling through the window because we had an old farmhouse and the skeleton keys were gone and we just locked the screen door and my mother would leave a sliding window unlocked. I'd slide it open, crawl through, and I'm about halfway in, halfway out, and I hear Warren give this war whoop out in the driveway and I just bust my ass. I jump off the porch and run out there and he dropped his satchel alongside of him and he's just standing there looking off into the field across the street, and I ran past the shadow of the corner of the house because it was like a full moon lit night, and as soon as I broke into the moonlight, I looked over there, and here is this flying saucer. And I mean, this thing had to be 200 feet in diameter. It was huge. It was in that like a haze. It had some lights, little tiny lights twinkling around the middle of it, like kind of like the sun hits a woman's diamond, how it throws the colored light.
You could make out the solid shape of of a disc.
Yes, and I dove through the window on my way back into the house, hollering to the top of my lungs, "Get out of bed! Get out!" And I ran in, and my mom, stepdad were like trying to, you know, rub it off. What's going on? I said, "Get out on the porch out front now!" And so all my brothers and sisters, my mom, stepdad, get out on the front porch, and here this thing is, still sitting there, not making a sound, not making a motion or anything, just, and it was almost like, dang, is this thing real? Is that being projected into the atmosphere? What is this, you know? And we're all in awe, standing there, you know, and I didn't think of, you know, taking a picture or whatever. I'm just thinking, what the hell is going on here,
of
you know?
Course. Yes, of course.
It's that close.
Of course.
And then we all looked at each other because we felt our guts start to quiver. I felt a low frequency, and I didn't realize what it was until it became audible. You know, it was sub-hearing when we felt it because it was shaking our bodies. And then as it became audible and raised in pitch, it went boom and got to a real high pitch and then just went shot. Right across the sky, I mean, faster than your imagination.
Now, that's a really close encounter. That's a really close encounter.
Oh, buddy.
Any effects from it, after effects, other than shock?
Well, it caused a lot of questions.
I bet.
Like, where the hell did that come from? And who was in it, you know? And I don't think it has any, you know, varying effect on what I believe as far as the unconditional love of God. I just am, because that's my creator, you know, and my mother's side, I'm Cherokee Indian, and in fact, I was given the Cherokee Medal of Honor last year, and it is the creator, and we refer to him within the Cherokee, you know, the Cherokee Nation, and the creator created that. I don't know what for. Mark, do you think
that what you saw was not of this earth? I'm sure that you've turned that over in your mind enough times.
Yes, I considered whether it was or wasn't, and in order for somebody to survive that kind of takeoff, I mean, I don't even know of a G-suit that would keep you from, you know, just...
turning into a pancake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that kind of an experience, if you think they're not of this earth, that would change a lot of things. Actually, we go around about this all the time on this program, you know, spirituality and religion,
mm-hmm.
versus the possibility that what if we were put here by them?
And they're keeping track of us?
Well, yeah. that's one thought, yes.
Yeah. That's you know, it's all speculation, of course, but after seeing that, and well, let me tell you just one little addition to that, Art, because my cousin who lived in the neighboring town had a water business, sold water softeners, water distillers, you know, water purifiers, and
sure.
I was out seeing him, and I was telling him, this is the first time I'd ever told anybody about this, because my mother told us if we had ever said anything to anybody, that she was going to kill us, because back then, in 68, of course, it was all the swamp gas and the weather balloons and all these things that people said were UFOs. And they came off as kooks in the paper, and she didn't want to be a kook or any of us to be labeled as kooks.
A lot of people understand that, believe me.
Yes. She said, just keep it to yourself. So anyways, I was out at my cousin's, and I'm telling him about this sighting. And as I'm telling him, the door to his office is open. His secretary walks around the corner. She's crying. She says, Mr. Hall, I don't mean to bother you, but can I come in here right now? And he's going, what's going on, Kat? Well, then she told the story because she'd heard me telling my cousin, Don, and she actually lived a quarter mile down the crossroad, which was only a quarter mile away
right.
from where I was at, saw the same night, the same year, I mean, you know, and it when it took off, it went to the east, which would have been over the top of her house, and that's the way it took off. And then she asked me, what does this mean? I mean, and here this girl is, I'd never, you know,
yes.
share this with anybody, and she just happens to be there and just happened to live a quarter of a mile, you know.
What did you tell her, do you recall?
Well, I told her, because she was crying, I mean, she was just losing it, and she thought, you know, had something to do with God, and I just calmed her down. I said, I don't think it has anything to do with, you know, we're supposed to. She says, well, what is this supposed to mean? What do we do with it? I
yes.
said, sit on. I don't know. You don't try to, you know, manufacture something within yourself. Let's just go on what is, and what is the next thing that happens, you know, in the next second.
I mean, a million things could run through your head. Seeing something
God.
As close as you did, you could think we were being invaded. You could
yeah.
think a million different things could go through your mind. How much, from where you were standing when you saw this disc, how big would you describe the disc? And by that I mean, like, we all know how big a full moon looks up in the sky, right? We
right.
know how big certain things look. So how big was it to you?
It appeared to be about 200 feet in diameter.
Filling up how much of the sky?
Oh, it was huge. Because it was only 100 yards away from us. I mean, it was just over across the street in the field, and the full moon had it just illuminated. And like I said, it had this haze around it. Oh, and one thing, when it took off, Art, the haze that was surrounding this saucer
yes.
stayed in the shape of a smoke ring. It was like a haze ring, but it was a billowing. It was just kept rolling and rolling and rolling.
That also makes sense, though. I can see it just blasted up through it, so it would have left like a smoke ring.
Yeah, and in the morning when I got up, which was, you know, real early because I was still excited about seeing this thing, I look out the window, and I'm looking. I know I'm not going to see it, but I'm looking for any kind of trace, and man, that smoke ring was still there, about maybe 10 times larger than it was when it started, but still rolling.
Well, you're lucky. You're lucky that you have other people that saw it. A lot of people, you know, they have these sightings alone, and I guess for the rest of their life, they have to wonder if this was something, you know, a product of their own brain somehow or another. You don't have to wonder that.
No.
And that's not the only sighting you had, is it?
No, it's not. We were at a recording studio in Florida, and we saw, well, we couldn't make out the crafts, but we saw the lights and the radical movements of these crafts that were over the ocean. And Mel had gone out to smoke a cigarette, and he come running back in. He says, "You guys come and see this, man. I ain't believing what's going on out here." And we all walked out there and said, "Got to be UFOs." You know, nothing moves like that. I mean, straight down and in a hard 90 at a fast rate of speed.
Do you have any personal theories, Mark, on whether, I don't know, whether contact actually has been made, whether this is something that our government is fully aware of and has made some sort of deal with them? Many people believe that. You think that our government knows what the hell's flying around in our skies?
Well, I believe so. I do. I do have, I won't mention any names, but I do have friends that are in the government.
I can imagine that.
Told me and showed me a few things that made me aware that the government is fully aware of what's going on. I don't know to what degree that the involvement is.
Can you share any of those generally, if you have to?
Well, this one person actually investigated crash sites, UFO crash sites, and this person was very good with the hieroglyphics and all this other stuff. Very into, you know, the detail and what she showed us was pictures.
Oh.
Yes, of things that, I mean, you would think they were out of a magazine or something.
This was a military person?
Well, yes.
Or a government person?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And I believe because they told us that they had been threatened, this person was threatened by the government to move up. They wanted to move up in a position, in a higher position in the organization that covered this, and she didn't want to because you know, she has children and she got, you know, concerns, and so they bugged her house every time she'd go out, she'd come back and do the sweep and find bugs, and I mean, they were watching her like a hawk. But what saved her life is her taking the files, I believe. And because that file's in her possession, she's got...
Are you talking about these files that you were shown?
Yes. Yeah. Now, you know, if
obviously, I've got to ask, do you have copies of these files?
Oh, no.
No? Could
no.
you... Are they,
I didn't even want copies of them. I looked at that and I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
This is what's going on? Okay.
Do you think those files still exist?
Oh, yeah. I believe so.
Oh.
And I know inside there's a lot of them that exist, but...
And you know who has them?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Do you think this person, before they leave us, will want to make this public?
I don't know. There was, you know, quite a fear put into them.
Uh-huh.
The whole family.
Yeah, I've heard that story a lot, Mark.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I didn't expect this much. Do me a favor, if you ever have the opportunity to talk to this female again,
yes,
and she would like to let loose or blow the whistle, as it were, we're available.
Yeah. Okay.
In the meantime,
you know, I definitely, because I think, you know, people. There's enough fear out there. You know, we don't need more fear. We need understanding. And
you're right about
that. Talking about it. And
all right, listen, my friend. It has been an honor to have you on the program.
Thank you, Brother Art. I appreciate the time, and sure appreciate you and your good work over the years. You still got a great voice, bro.